How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Deneen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcasts, I educate the public on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. My guest today is Danielle DeFabio. He is the co-director of Disorder, the Rare Disease Film Festival. And this event's really cool. It's first of its kind, showcasing a myriad of films from around the world addressing the challenges of life with a rare disease. So the film festival has support from some of the leading organizations in the rare disease advocacy community, including NORD, Global Genes, The Mighty, RDUF, and MassBio. The event's going to be in Boston, Massachusetts, so not too far from UConn if you're listening in the area. It's going to be on October 2nd and 3rd of this year, 2017. A little bit more about our guests. Danielle has also written about the rare disorder Menkes disease for The Mighty. One of these stories even won the 2015 Rare Patient Story Award from Global Genes, and he made a 12-minute documentary about the syndrome narrated by Oscar nominee Mary McDonnell. In 2008, he founded the Boston Spa Film Festival, and he's also a pioneer of original online content, which we now call web series. He co-wrote and co-produced the internet's first animated series. He's created videos and motion graphics for American Cinematographer, PBS, Biotechs, Hospitals, TNT's The Closer, and HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. You have quite a list there. Thanks for so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's exciting to talk to someone that has kind of a different background than a lot of people that we have on the show. So it's cool to see that you have a lot of experience with film and content, and you're bringing this to the rare disease community.
Yeah, like a lot of people that have rare in their family, you don't get involved until it, you know, affects you directly, and then you find your way. And, you know, a lot of people might host a 5K run or something like that, and I'm not much of a runner, so I had to find something that was a little more suited to my skill set.
And so this is the first of its kind. I've never heard of a rare disease film festival. I mean, that's pretty awesome to be able to coordinate people that have had and made all of their own documentaries, but bring everybody together.
Yeah, we knew of a few that would happen on Rare Disease Day. They'd have screenings of a few short films or maybe even a feature film. And they always, you know, tended to happen on Rare Disease Day. We didn't know of any sort of standalone event that was maybe a little bit broader than sort of what we were seeing on, you know, one day a year when so much awareness is already happening on February 28th or 29th. So we deliberately put it on the opposite side of the calendar and looked for a way to sort of make it as big as we possibly could.
And so tell us a little bit more about what the event is going to hold. It's over 2 days. And again, for people to get in their head, it's called Disorder, the Rare Film Festival. So what can people expect?
Sure. If you went to everything we offer, you'd be seeing 7 different slates of films. Most of them are shorter than 20 minutes. We have a few that are around an hour long. 7 slates of films would be basically watching about 7 hours worth of films. And then after each slate of film, there's a speaker, whether that be the filmmaker or someone involved in the film. Sometimes they're doing Q&A. And then sometimes there's a different speaker that may not be related to the films you just saw directly, but is speaking to rare disease issues and concerns of patients and advocates. And those speakers, you know, fill most of the hour between slates, you know, about 40 minutes, 45 minutes of speaking. So you could have quite a full day for October 2nd and October 3rd.
And so who's included in this lineup of speaking between the films, and what kind of disorders? I mean, obviously they're talking about rare diseases, but what are a few of the disorders they're going to be talking about?
Right. Most of them will speak more generally to the patient situation for any and all disorders, but for a particular disorder, for example, Michelle Hall is in a film which is narrated by William H. Macy called This Is Michelle. And she has EB, which is epidermolysis bullosa. And it's a skin disorder where the skin doesn't grow correctly, I think, without enough elasticity. So Michelle is the subject of that film and then will be a speaker at our event afterward, after the screening of that film.
And we actually have a couple audio clips that we can play now so people can get a little taste for what they're going to see in the film.
Mankey's disease is a rare fatal genetic disorder. Unless detected and treated in the first 10 days of life, boys with Mankey's typically live 3 to 10 years.
And so babies born with Mankey's disease have an inability or limited ability to transport copper from the intestine into the body.
Mankey's disease is sometimes called kinky hair syndrome due to the brittle, twisted hair infant boys with the condition display.
The flower!
It's okay, Ashley, I can get it.
See me?
Whoa.
There was a flower there, right?
Proven.
We know you're Peruvian. We're in Peru. Duh.
No. Proven. You have proven yourself.
Please tell people I was a nice, normal girl before my psychotic break in the jungle.
Are you looking for this?
Please, I need that. It could cure me.
I'm sorry, this flower cannot heal your body.
My name is Natalie Metzger. I'm a film director and producer, and I'm an HAE patient. I don't tell people about it. I don't kind of broadcast it because, you know, it's a fear of like, well, them not trusting me to be able to handle it. And I take on a lot of things. I'm working constantly. And I think that it certainly tarnishes that somewhat if they don't completely understand it or don't, you know, understand how in control of it you can be. An attack for me, if I treat it immediately, will only last probably like 30 minutes to an hour. If I wait, it could take up to a day.
And somewhere in New Jersey, a baby was born without any skin on her little toes. This is Michelle, owner of the toes in question. And this is her story. Michelle Kathleen Hall was born with a rare genetic disorder that causes her skin to blister and shear away, leaving painful open wounds. Epidermolysis bullosa, or EB, results from the lack of collagen 7, a critical protein that binds the layers of the skin together.
Hey, take a deep breath.
What's wrong?
Does it feel hard? Does it feel a little hard today? Yeah? Are you tired?
No.
No?
I don't wipe off my tears.
Yeah. Remember how strong you are, okay? Okay, you're doing great. You're so strong. You're doing a great job. Okay?
Get your balance. So he's getting excited about his treat.
Almost there. You almost got it.
Mike told us there were 7 other patients. Tess was the 8th. He put us in touch with his boss, Dr. Christian Schaff, the geneticist at Baylor who studies the USP7 gene. He explained what USP7 does.
It's an important protein that has a role in the processing of proteins as the body has to decide whether proteins within the cell should be recycled or should be degraded.
And so we just listened to a couple of those clips. What are some other films that people can expect?
You know, there's so many great ones, and it is so difficult to choose which ones we could and would include. But you know, just some that pop into my head as maybe standouts. There's a film Cuerdas, which is Spanish for the word strings. They never describe what condition is depicted. It's sort of a 3D Pixar type animation style. So it's very charming. A young girl befriends a boy in a wheelchair who obviously has special needs, but it's done so earnestly and honestly that, you know, it's not overwrought in any way. The boy just has a look and a position of his body, and you just know kids like that without knowing what disorder he may have. You know, we've all come across, it reminds us of our own children, you know, if we're in this community watching these films. And that particular film is very unique in that it's our only fully animated film. It feels very, even though it's a sad topic, feels very uplifting and enjoyable. And so that's a standout in my mind.
And so for that film, it's, as you said, kind of very inclusive. It's not necessarily highlighting one type of rare disease, but showing kind of what it's like to have a rare disease and be, maybe feel a little bit different than other kids in your community. And for hopefully kids watching it to kind of identify with that if they have a rare disease, and if they don't, to kind of see that there are different kids out there and that we should kind of include everybody.
Exactly. It's all the plot of the film is about how some kids can't quite understand this boy in the wheelchair, and this one girl makes the extra effort and they become great friends.
And so one of the films that is going to be playing at this film festival is actually an Academy Award nominated short called Our Curse. Can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Sure. The same year I made my own film, a lot of people, of course, were pointing my attention to the fact that a rare disease film was Oscar nominated. And one of our advisors, Fumi Kitahara from our festival, had worked with Tomas Solinsky, who directed Our Curse. She put us together. She connected us, and Tomas is very supportive, and he has said some kind things about my own film, and we just stayed in touch. And when I had the idea for this festival, the first person I thought of, other than Bo Bigelow and myself, was to get Our Curse to be a part of this, and he readily agreed, and we're thrilled to have such an excellent film. CCHS is a breathing disorder, and if you watch the film, you see that their newborn son, basically, they're terrified to let him fall asleep, because if they fall asleep, they stop breathing. So there's good reason it was Oscar nominated.
And you said at the beginning that a lot of people will get involved with the rare disease community because it affects their family personally, and that's kind of when they start really getting into patient advocacy and helping other families. How did you get involved in the rare disease community?
Yeah, that was it. We got a diagnosis for my son that was a disorder we'd never heard of, Menkes disease, and all of a sudden you need to get educated on that very quickly, and then the news is so dire, and you think, what can be done? And luckily, a good friend of mine from high school and college, Katie McLaren, told me about Rare Disease Day, and then she got me to join her at a mitochondrial disease walk, and I started to see how these communities were motivated and activated, and started to look for what could I do in that space. And, you know, some disorders, you can find a little bit more support that's already there, and lucky for us, the Menkes Foundation was already doing great work, and there was a before Facebook, there was a Yahoo group, then it became a Facebook group of the families that are facing Menkes, so we could find each other and communicate with each other and compare notes and coordinate our efforts to increase awareness. So that's pretty much how I got started doing it.
So being connected with other parents that have kids with the same disorder as your son has really helped you in understanding kind of experiences that they've gone through and sharing that and having that support network?
Absolutely. The situations are also unique. You know, any person facing a rare disease, it's common that your local pediatricians and doctors aren't going to be expert in the disease you're facing. And it turns out that the other parents or patients that you can get in touch with, they are often the best experts. And, you know, it's essential, I think, to find those people that you can compare notes with. In the case of Menkes disease and probably many others, even when you find people suffering from the same disease, there are various mutations within that disease. So my son's symptoms and prognosis may not be exactly the same as the next person I talk to, even though they're facing Menkes disease. So there's a lot of commonality for sure, but it's not as predictive as you might hope, finding those people and saying, well, how did your 8-year-old manage? And you figure out that it's not going to be the same for your own 8-year-old.
And so you kind of explored the disease and highlighted a lot of the different aspects of it in your short film, Menkes Disease, Finding Help and Hope. What kind of information did you provide in the video and kind of sharing symptoms and how people are diagnosed? How many people are out there?
Yeah, the main thing we needed to get across was that if detected in the first 10 days of life, there is a treatment that can be highly effective for Menkes disease, and that's copper injections. But most people wouldn't know to look for Menkes disease unless they had a family history. So there's two populations. 2/3 of Menkes patients are inherited from family genetics, and 1/3 is a random or spontaneous mutation, which is the case for my son. So we had no family indicator to lead us to do the test, and therefore the test wasn't done in my son's case till age 1, which is essentially too late. He did get the copper treatment anyway in the case that it might be effective. But we did want the film to be another piece of awareness that maybe OBGYN nurses or doctors or NICU staff might more readily think of the symptoms of Menkes if they saw a boy with possibly seizures or low muscle tone, or the biggest indicator at that early age is the kinky hair, which is short, twisted, coarse, brittle hair. And that's one of the few unique ones, because the other symptoms like weak muscle tone or failure to hit your milestones or even the pudgy cheeks, those can all be confused with a different disorder, and so maybe you might not test for Menkes. So that was the main thing to try to get across in the film, is that sort of need for that early detection if possible.
And since early detection is so critical, you said first 10 days is the best for intervention?
Right.
So is there newborn screening for this then? Because I know a lot of, on a state-by-state basis, patient advocates are really pushing to add the disorder that their child has to newborn screening, so we're able to detect this. Are you aware if there's newborn screening or if it's required by certain states?
Well, so that's the great good news that we have. Since making the film in 2015, thanks to the great efforts by the Menkes Foundation, there now is a newborn screening that's very close to being available. Now, that's a neonatal screening, not a prenatal screening.
Okay.
We're glad to have it either way. Of course, it'd be great to get to the prenatal screening someday, but that's even more difficult science to sort of crack there. But so once this sort of hits the market or is available, you know, broadly, you're right. Then the challenge becomes getting on a state by state basis. Should this be added to the newborn screening that's standard in each state? And, that becomes a lobbying effort. Some states will readily add it. You know, it fits some great criteria for the benefit of early detection leads to a treatment, which leads to great outcomes. So for some states, it's going to be a very easy thing to add to their screening. In other states, it might take a little more pressure from advocates lobbying.
And it kind of sounds like a type of disorder that would be really good to add, because the intervention, if early enough, is really critical and has a big impact on the child's life.
Absolutely. There are kids who have gotten the treatment in the correct time frame, and they've gone on to be what we'd say neurologically normal. You know, one boy graduated high school and plays drums. You know, they walk and talk, and, you know, maybe their gait or their posture is a little different, but most people wouldn't look at them and say, you know, do you have a rare disease? Whereas without the treatment or getting the treatment too late, most of those boys are not going to walk or talk or grasp an object, and they probably will live less than 10 years.
So that is a huge, huge difference when you're looking at the effect of just, you said that it's copper injections, correct?
Correct. Copper histidine, and it really depends on the unique mutation that each patient has. Some of them have a complete ATP7A deletion, and others have, like my son's is called a leaky splice site mutation, which means he is producing some of the protein which transports copper. Now, those are the cases where you have to look at how much is some and how much is enough. Is it 10% of what a typical person would transport in copper, and is 10% enough, or does it need to be more like 15 or 20%? Or so for those mutations that do still transport some copper, that's where the therapy seems to be effective.
And going through this and having, you know, from diagnosis of your son to now being a full-fledged patient advocate, what advice can you offer other parents of children that have rare diseases or something that isn't diagnosed yet and they're in that situation where they're Googling ferociously but they don't know what their child has?
Yeah, it's very tricky. If you don't know your diagnosis, that's a different type of pain. And I know so many people take up to 5 years, maybe 7 years getting a diagnosis. And it's hard to believe you can view getting a fatal diagnosis as being lucky in a sense, but at least it takes you out of the unknown diagnosis space and into maybe a more actionable space where you can seek out, are there clinical trials? Are there support groups? Now that we know what we're facing, what can we do? There are support groups for the undiagnosed. And in fact, we have a film in the festival that's called Undiagnosed. We're actually showing a 10-minute clip because the full feature film isn't quite finished yet. So we're glad to have maybe some people's first look at that experience as they face how long you can go looking for your diagnosis and not getting answers. And of course, without answers, you're also not getting your treatments. So it's a very tough struggle, both before you get a diagnosis, and then it just becomes a very different, more specific struggle after you get your diagnosis.
And for people that want to attend this event, to, you know, see these films, but also meet other people that are in the same situation as them, or maybe they're students looking to really help the rare disease community, where can people buy tickets to Disorder, the Rare Disease Film Festival?
At our website, rarediseasefilmfestival.com, there's a link to buy tickets. And if people are familiar with Film Freeway, that's a place where you could look up Disorder, the Rare Disease Film Festival, and buy tickets on Film Freeway.
And so this event is going to take place in Boston on October 2nd and 3rd. Do you guys have any plans to have other film festivals at different places in the United States or maybe the world, or am I jumping the gun a little bit?
Maybe just a little bit, but okay. We've given it some thought, nothing concrete yet. We like the idea of sort of touring the festival and seeking out geographic areas like Boston, and in this case it's specifically Cambridge, just the other side of the river from Boston, which have the geographic concentration of a lot of good hospitals, a lot of good researchers, a lot of biotech, a lot of patient groups, because we don't want to just reach any audience. You know, in one sense of awareness, any audience is a good audience, but we wanted to try to put the right people in the room, like you said, so they could have those conversations, they could meet each other, they might spark some new ideas. And, you know, by addressing so many different rare diseases all together, we create the potential that somebody facing Hunter syndrome might be pursuing their treatment. And all of a sudden they learn about NGLY1 for the first time, and they say, boy, you know, there's some similarities here in the mechanism, and maybe we can pivot a little bit on the research we were already doing and point it towards your disease too. And now all of a sudden some new science is happening that wouldn't have happened before. That's our best blue sky scenario, that we hope we can create those kind of moments where people put their heads together like that.
And kind of become a springboard for people to launch off of.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so for people that maybe can't attend in Boston this October, can they watch most of the films online, or is it more the premiere is in person?
You know, it's interesting. There's a combination of films we have that are more advocacy films, and those tend to be available online, whether it be YouTube or Vimeo, because you want to get the word out to as many people as possible, and that's a great way to do it. And then other films we have are a little bit more on the film festival circuit, meaning they only want to be appearing for the first 1 or 2 years at film festivals. And then after that, they'll decide, do they make those films available online, or do they maybe sell the rights to a Netflix or something if it's possible, you know, if it's a popular enough type of film. So we will look at, you know, after our festival's done, maybe posting as many as we can in terms of links on our website so that people can sort of find a lot of them all in one place. Like you said, if they weren't able to attend, but they still want to see them. And of course, you know, a Google search often turns up some great results.
Right. And just a closing question for you. How can people help contribute to the rare disease community? Say if they're a student or, you know, maybe already in their field, but really want to help, but they're not sure how to get involved.
That's a good question. I think, you know, if they had a disease specific interest, then there's almost always an advocacy group for each disorder, and seeking that group out and just offering, you know, I'm interested, what can I do? Where's your need? If they're not so disease specific, you know, they're on their career path and they're looking to get into industry or genetic counseling or something like that. Right now it's an explosive area, and I think there's so many opportunities, and, you know, the first step of your career will probably open more doors than you ever imagined for where it can lead in all these different directions. And it's such a, in a way, small community that you quickly get to know everybody else, and they'll point you in directions of, you know, so-and-so needs somebody to address this, or needs a patient advocate over here, or it's really a small world once you're introduced to it.
Well, thank you so much, Daniel, for sharing so much about your experience with your son's disorder, and also about the film festival Disorder, the Rare Disease Film Festival, that's going to take place in Cambridge, which is right next to Boston, on October 2nd and 3rd. More information is on their website at rarediseasefilmfestival.com, and also their Facebook page at facebook.com/rarediseasefilmfestival. You can get more information about the show at dnapodcast.com, on Twitter at dnapodcast, and any questions for me or Daniel, I can forward him questions. You can send in at info@dnapodcast.com. Thanks so much again for coming on the show and sharing with us so much about not only this specific film festival, but really the rare disease community.
Oh, thank you very much.
So I hope to see people at the film festival in Boston, October 2nd and 3rd. Thanks for listening, and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.